Welcome to Theatre Club Podcast.
We bring you theatre news,
theatre reviews,
and theatre-themed booze. Do we have some booze this week?
We do indeed. I have made a cocktail because one of the shows I went to see this week was set in the Prohibition era, and that is like a cocktail era that I enjoy. And so when I was watching it, I thought, Prohibition cocktail. So should I say what three shows we're going to be doing this episode and
yes.
what this cocktail is inspired
yes,
by? So we are going to be reviewing Underdog, the other Bronte at the National Theatre in the Dorfman Theatre. I went to see Machinelle, which is a play from 1928. That's on at the Old Vic, and that is what has inspired this cocktail. And then lastly, we're going to talk about Nye, starring Michael Sheen at the National Theatre. So this cocktail is called the Delia, and it was popular in the 1920s in the Prohibition era. And it's like a sidecar, which we definitely made on this podcast before, which is also of that era. But this one is just gin, triple sec and lemon juice. So it's very simple, which most Prohibition cocktails are. A very simple but kind of elegant cocktail. And this is inspired by going to see Machinelle, which, as I'll talk about later in the podcast, is set in, I think it's set in New York, or like in America in Prohibition era, which is where this cocktail comes from.
Cheers! Cheers.
So, I mean, it's quite gin-based, but I like those kind of simple Prohibition kind of era, old-fashioned
cocktails.
Strong, but kind of clean, simple, delicious. And also, it might help take the edge off the garlic breath that you've given us both with the lovely dip you served when I arrived, but, ooh, garlicky.
I know, I feel like the whole house smells of garlic now.
It's nice. Garlic bread and garlic dip. It was just delish. So before we go on with our three reviews, and before your top tip, did you watch Olivier's, which were last Sunday?
No, I didn't.
So Operation Mincemeat won Best New Musical.
Yay!
Which is great, because we went to see that back in 2019 at the New Diorama, and we've kind of followed it all the way along its journey.
You could say we discovered it.
We discovered it. And it's now gone all the way. It's at the Fortune Theatre now, and it's won Best New Musical, and Jack Malone won Best Supporting Actor in a Musical, who played, what's the secretary called?
Is that the one that reads the letter out?
Yes, who sings that, like, amazing, heartbreaking song.
Yeah.
He won Best Supporting Actor in a Musical, which...
So well deserved.
So well deserved. I was really, really hoping he'd win. So that was really good.
Just to pause, if somebody wants to go and watch the musical Operation Mincemeat now, is that in the theatre that's got really bad legroom?
I can't...
I think it is. It's like really
small. Fortune Theatre, where...
Tiny little
legroom. Women in Black was on.
I can't remember if
the legroom was that bad when I saw it there.
I've been there and it is tight.
Oh, really?
Like, some seats are. So, like, look on Theatre Monkey or Seat Plan websites if you are going to go watch it. Okay, right,
We love that show. Trying to think what else was good about the night. The opening number was quite fun. Hannah Waddingham presented, and she did a kind of big musical number where she sort of sang with piano accompaniment, and then the choir came on, and then there was, like, an orchestra. And she just did, like, a fun arrangement that actually felt like a kind of special pre-planned, properly directed, staged opening.
Because sometimes,
you know, like, I love the Tony Awards, they do it so well. But the Olivier's are usually a bit lower, not low rent, but, like, there's not as much budget put into it. Whereas this felt like a proper big opening. She really went for it. I think she did Anything Goes. They just did this whole kind of jazz take on it.
Oh, and that's fun.
Yeah, you can watch it on YouTube. It, like, really went through some different stages, which I thought was kind of fun, and I felt like they'd put some more effort into making this feel like an actual proper award show that you want to watch for those performances, which I thought was cool. And then all the musicals performed, Operation Mincemeat, so I watched all of those. They were shot okay. I feel like the problem with the Royal Albert Hall is I don't want any wides. I don't want to see outside the proscenium arch for a show that needs to be within a proscenium arch. And I feel like you need to shoot it how you see it. Six a musical, maybe you can show you're in the Royal Albert Hall, but I just think they rely too much on that wide.
Yeah.
And I don't think it aids the production. It makes them feel
smaller,
dwarfed.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Really,
I
want close ups of it, because that's a unique perspective that the camera can give to that performance. So stay in tighter, please. I didn't like all the wides, but the performances themselves were really good. Hadestown performed. They actually did like a sort of a salute to the National Theatre. We're actually going to do two reviews of the National Theatre in this episode, as we mentioned. And they did, Ralph Fiennes came out and did slightly too long a monologue from Dear England. Went on a bit too long, but then it kind of flashed into like some archive of the National Theatre and then led into a rather saccharine rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone, which I thought was a bit of a weird choice. I know they did the Carousel production, but it's so synonymous with football and specifically with Hillsborough that it felt a bit like, really, we're doing You Never Walk Alone?
Yeah.
Just felt just a bit like
playing into
saccharine
it a bit.
And like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Give us something bit, but that was lame.
Yeah.
But the clips were fun. And then also the guy who plays, I can't remember his name, but the guy who played Harry Kane, he won Best Supporting Actor in a Play.
That was the one that got all the laughs in Dear England.
Yeah.
Even like for people that wouldn't even know who he was, like if you're not a football fan, it was brilliant.
Yeah, so he won Olivier. I thought that was quite fun. But yeah, so I thought it was a fairly good night. A better Olivier's than I think in previous years. I think Hannah Waddingham did a really good job because she is a proper performer, and so we got a good opening, I thought, which was nice.
She's so striking and confident.
Yeah, and her voice is amazing. Like, the rendition she did of Anything Goes was really all over the place, but in a fun kind of way.
That's good.
So I thought that was cool. So yeah, that was the Olivier's. I was just really happy Jack Malone won. So let's go from that into your top tip.
So my top tip of the week is a premiere of a Tony Award-winning rock musical called Passing Strange. This was on Broadway in 2008. It was nominated for 7 Tony Awards and it won the Tony for Best Musical Book. And it's about a young musician and he sets out on an electrifying musical odyssey to find himself and his place in the world, swapping his middle-class LA upbringing for punk rock and protest in 1980s Amsterdam and Berlin.
That sounds cool.
Do you know who Giles Torrera is?
Yes, who was in Hamilton.
Yes, he is starring in it.
Oh, he's very good.
And it's directed by Liesl Tommy, who directed Aretha Franklin biopic Respect.
Oh, I still haven't seen that movie.
Oh, it's really good.
Yes, with Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah, I loved it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, Giles Torrera's great. I saw him in that play, Rosmahom, as well.
Oh, cool. Okay, well, book and lyrics are by Stu, and the music is by Stu Stewart.
Oh yeah, see, that rings a bell. Stu is like a stage name for the who wrote the music. That kind of sounds familiar now. I'm going to have to look this one up.
Anyway, I don't know a lot about it. I just, it's playing at the Young Vic Theatre, which is just a really cool theatre. We've seen so many interesting shows there.
They have good taste in terms of what they bring over, like which musicals they choose, like Fun Home, like,
yes.
I feel like they have good taste in what to put on there.
Yeah, this opens on the 14th of May and runs till the 6th of July. The tickets are very reasonable. They start from £12 mm-hmm. for the lucky dip, which means you pay £12 and you can be sat anywhere.
Oh yeah, you sort of hover by the door and then when the show's about to begin, they fill in all the empty gaps with those people.
Which I think is such a cool idea. And then the top price seat is £52.
I think their seats are so affordable. We always pay maybe £25 and we always have a really good view.
Yeah, it's a modern theatre, so every sight line is good.
And the configuration changes, but you always feel close to the action because it's not huge.
So Passing Strange, new rock, punk, comedy vibe. Go and check it out at the Young Vic Theatre.
Yeah, you can't go wrong, can you, with trying something at the Young Vic for £25.
Yeah, and I've like looked at some of the cast rehearsal photos and it looks like there's like music on stage, there's people with the guitar. So I'm like, even just seeing live music is always interesting, isn't it?
Well, that sounds cool. So remind me what it's called. I've already forgotten.
Passing Strange.
Passing Strange.
It's not a great title, is it?
Well, maybe once you see the show, it'll all make sense. Passing Strange.
So it's just not like a phrase that you'd use very often.
Well, maybe we'll find out what it means.
I keep forgetting
I'm up for
it as
seeing
well.
This. Passing Strange at the Young Vic.
Also worth mentioning, at the Young Vic, they do, similar to the National Theatre, they do lower price seats if you're under 25.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
at the National Theatre it's actually under 30. But those seats, like £33 seat for an under 25 is only £24.
That's good.
Yeah, I really like that.
It's neither of us, but
I also wanted to talk about another top tip, but I didn't think you'd be very interested in it, potentially.
What is it?
So when I was younger, I used to read a book called The Ballet Shoes, and
They made a film with Emma Watson, didn't they?
Did they? It's about, like, three sisters, and they're called, like, Posy Prevalence and something, and they, you know, they're adopted by their uncle who goes on travels and finds these orphans and sends them home, and they're looked after by his sister, like, Sylvia and her nanny. Yeah. And it's just a really good story, and it made me want to like start ballet. And they are putting a production on of it at the National Theatre, at the Olivier.
Oh, wow. When?
It's in November, and the tickets are going on sale this week on the 3rd of May.
Is that like their Christmas show, do we think? Is it running through December?
Ooh, let me check. Okay, you sound interested. I didn't think you'd be that keen.
Well, I mean, I don't know the source material, but I've like the National Theatre. It's a beloved book.
Well, it starts on the 23rd of November, so you've got quite a long time to read Ballet Shoes by Noel Stratfield.
Okay. It's probably of my reading level, isn't it?
Public booking opens midday on Thursday the 2nd of May. Based on the best-selling book, revitalised for the stage, suitable for 7 years and up. And it's directed by Katie Rudd, who did Oceans at the End of the Lane.
Oh, okay. Ocean at the End of the Lane. That was cool. Okay, I'm interested. Fine. Top tip part two. Booking goes, when was it? May 2nd.
Mm.
On public. Is that on general sale?
Or
is
That's to the public.
So if you've got your American Express, you can probably do it earlier.
But... Members is already on sale.
Okay. But you will try the general then on May 2nd. Okay.
The other thing, we'll discuss this later in the episode, is the early start time that National Theatre are trialling. And this production is doing earlier start times, a few dates at 6:30.
Well, let's go straight into our review then of our first show that we saw at the National, which is Underdog, The Other Bronte, which we did go to the 6:30 start time production. And we were out at 8:45, I believe. I was on the 9 o'clock train.
It's been one of the most liberating experiences of my life.
I think I got home at, 9:35. Still had time for an episode of Interior Design Masters.
I mean, it's great. It works. Yeah. We can all get to a theatre by 6:30 in London.
Yeah.
Like, why are things starting at 7:30? And often not even starting at 7:30 because they go up late. And home and you're like, it's nearly midnight and I've just been to watch a show.
Hopefully they'll do more of these. So they did a few, and we went to see Underdog, The Other Bronte, which is written by Sarah Gordon and directed by Natalie Ibu. And it's about the Bronte sisters. Can you remember all their names? All three?
Louisa
Bronte. Where have you got that from?
Okay, Charlotte.
Yes.
Amy.
No.
Annie.
Anne. And who wrote Wuthering Heights?
Jane Eyre.
Emily Bronte.
Oh, Emily.
So we knew loads about the Brontes going into this.
Cut it all out.
It's all staying in.
Oh, I sound so silly.
But I mean, I didn't know that much about the Brontes going into this. But for anyone who does know, the three Bronte sisters all wrote. So Charlotte Bronte wrote Jane Eyre. Emily Bronte wrote Wuthering Heights, huge books. And then Anne Bronte, also a novelist, but I hadn't heard of her novels, and in history they're not as well remembered, but she was also a novelist. All three of these sisters were novelists. They wrote under male pseudonyms, as like the Bell brothers. And so this production is looking at them and looking at kind of focusing on Anne and her works, and sort of maybe potentially, what does she say at the beginning, that it's sort of based on truth, or their idea of what might have happened.
Yeah.
And
they're imagining conversations between the sisters. They're imagining what things were like in their home life, piecing together, through history, I guess. They're like, if this brother was, quite abusive, wasn't he, their brother?
Oh, yeah, their brother who was an alcoholic and died.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, like, the impact of that and how it went into their work. And
but it's also looking at whether or not maybe perhaps Charlotte Bronte kind of was a bit jealous of Anne Bronte, her sister, that relationship at the core, and kind of Emily in the middle, and how perhaps, I guess like women competing, like being there for each other is maybe one side of the story, supporting each other. They all write under these pseudonyms, but then maybe when they make a lot of references in this to like the one seat at the table for a woman. What's that like when all three sisters are vying for that one?
And Charlotte Bronte was saying, well, it doesn't matter who has the seat, as long as a woman has the seat, and it's just important that we've even got a voice. But the other sisters are sort of like,
your ego is getting the better of you. So Gemma Whelan stars as Charlotte Bronte, who people will know her from Game of Thrones.
Yep. I recognised her straight away.
Upstart Crow.
Oh, she was really good in that.
Yeah. And I liked the way that they began the show. So this is quite, it's set, obviously, Bronte's time, whatever that is, the 1840s.
It's petticoats and boots.
But it's quite, the show is anachronistic, so they use, like, they're quite foul-mouthed, they're not like what we usually see period drama, they're kind of swearing, there's some modern music, so there's like these modern, edgier, feminist touches put on it. And the opening is quite good. She walks around talking to the audience, breaking the fourth wall. I really like the set at the beginning.
I wanted to talk about the set and just the general like direction and set design and the revolve that they had going around. Yeah. There's a bit where they would go in a horse and cart and that they used funny. The revolve and they used two little shells for the... And everyone was laughing and I thought that was really fun, crafty theatre making. Yeah. I liked that.
So yeah, this is quite funny. But I wouldn't say it's like huge laughs. It's not like played for laughs. It's more like...
A titter.
Gentle laughter throughout. You know, often brought on by their use of, you know, calling someone a knobhead or like using that anachronistic language. So it's kind of gently amusing, but not. It's not like a laugh out loud funny.
No. So the stage I thought was really great. The performances were really good. And I loved learning about... something I really didn't know that much about.
Too.
I didn't study this at school.
Finding out how Anne became a writer and was a governess and, all the backstory was really interesting to me.
The way that they portrayed all of the reviews of the literary critics saying how amazing it was, but then as soon as they thought it was by a woman, they were slamming it. And that was all really interesting. But let's just get on to what we didn't like, because I just feel like it was shrill. There was a lot of bickering, even between the sisters, in the home life, and it started at a level 10, which meant they had nowhere to go to. When you're screaming at somebody from the minute you start going, that's my book, it can't escalate. And it just, to me, I was like, everyone please stop screaming at each other.
Well, you definitely didn't like, was it Bronwyn, their brother, when he entered, he was quite at a different pitch. But I was thinking, like, was that maybe a choice of, so we have the three female characters and then all the ensemble are made up of male actors playing all the characters, other women, other men in this world. Maybe like that was the idea, that their performances were like heightened. The male ensemble was like a sort of over the top heightened, and the three Bronte sisters were our central thing. Maybe.
Oh, but then do you remember that bit where they when she goes to become a governess, one of the sisters,
yes,
and the adults playing children, which was one of the things I hate in theatre anyway,
like
they came running out screaming. It never went anywhere. They just were screaming, running around for so long.
Yeah.
That didn't need to happen. It was like...
Well, they were supposed to show they were like horrible little brats.
It just felt a little bit...
it wasn't done
for
as...
schools. Theatre for school. This is what this kind of felt like to me. It was so broad, so widely... highly pitched and overacted, and
I thought the sisters did a better job though. So Anne Bronte was Rhiannon Clements, and Emily Bronte didn't actually have as much to do. Adele James, she didn't have as much to do, but I did think that Rhiannon Clements brought like a kind of a nice vulnerability to Anne, but then there was that twist of like, well, I wasn't, because that's how she's always portrayed to be.
They argued the whole way through, though, Oscar. When was there any nice moments?
That's kind of what the... Yeah, that's... Yeah, maybe what you think we should have seen, like, more of the sisterly bond prior to the breakdown, perhaps. Well, she did say she's hard to love, you know, and accuses Charlotte of being hard to love. But maybe that's a problem for
this show is hard to love.
But I quite enjoyed it in the context that our tickets were £20. That helped me enjoy it. It's a 6:30 show. I was out early. Mm-hmm. So while I was, like, the laughter was kind of gentle and it didn't really blow me away with any of the staging, I thought the performances were good. And
I thought the performances were good as well.
By the three sisters.
I just didn't like the direction. You know, they've obviously gone in that tone and gone straight away, like, big energy, you're squabbling. And it's like, you can still say to somebody, that's my book. In a way that's not, hey, that's my book. And I'm like, oh, I can't bear these voices.
Yeah. Well, I think I probably enjoyed it a little more than you. But with all those things, the context of, you know, but it didn't blow me away. But I was happy for a nice early show for £20.
If somebody had tickets to it and was going to see it, I'd say, oh, go, definitely go.
I think you do learn interesting stuff about them.
It's not awful at all. I just, like, it's not a show for me. Like, it doesn't...
It wasn't super special.
No.
We didn't mention which theatre it's in. It's in the Dorfman, which is the smallest of the National Theatre's three spaces. And our tickets were only £20. They're on the side of the circle. So if you sit on the sides, you get a slightly restricted view because you're kind of looking around. But for this show, that didn't really matter, I don't think.
I thought they were great seats.
So if you want to go, I would say try and get some £20 seats or do the National Theatre's Friday Rush.
Which is £10. They release them every Friday for the following week's performance.
Yeah, at 1 p.m. you log on to the website, Friday Rush landing page, and get tickets. But yeah, this it was it. We didn't blow us away, did it?
No, it didn't.
But that was... Underdog, the other Bronte, at the Dorfman Theatre at the National, and it is on there until May 25th.
25th of May is what you mean.
Is that an Americanism, do you reckon, to say May 25th?
Yeah.
It is, isn't it? Because that's the way they write it.
Yeah.
I flip between the two, but yes. But I have written it here. Both
are correct.
25th of May.
Yeah.
Underdog, the other Bronte. Let's move straight on then to the show that I went to see without you, which was at the Old Vic Theatre. This is their new production of Machinelle.
I don't know what that is.
Machinelle, well, I didn't, but I have seen a production at school, I think. But it's a very famous play from 1928, I want to say, by Sophie Treadwell, who was, I believe she was a reporter in the 20s. And the first, I think it was the first time they used an electric chair to kill somebody, was this woman and her lover who plotted her husband's death. And a photograph was taken of her in the electric chair, and it sort of set the nation a-talking in America in 1926, I think this was. This photograph of a woman in an electric chair due to be executed.
Horrible.
Yeah, and it sort of inspired her to write this piece based on that story. So it is about a woman who is trapped in a life that she doesn't want. She's trapped in the mechanics of the patriarchy, and she is sort of driven to this, but it does follow that story.
She's driven to murder.
She's sort of driven to murder as some like form of escape. So, but this
it
is
sounds
a much,
really dark.
It is, but it's a much more feminist look at it. So I think even watching it now, you're like, wow, for 1928, this is like a really fresh take on how you'd portray that sort of woman in theatre. And the lead role is played by Rosie Sheehy. And she was really good. This performance, like, she's holding this whole thing together. And it is very, like, I don't want to use the word stressful. It's like high tension, because from the beginning we see she is in this like crushing mechanism of, she's in New York City. She works in the Steno Pool.
What's that?
A typist.
Oh, right.
And everything is sort of bearing down upon her. And from the opening, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, this is, it's everyone speaks in these short, clipped, repetitive sentences, almost like they're not real people. They're like automated
robots,
kind of robot style things. And this sort of presents the world she's in. She marries this older, I think it's her boss, who she doesn't love, but she's kind of, her mum's like, what else are you going to do? This is like what you need to do in life. So that pressure forces her into that situation. And then she meets a man in a bar and sort of has an affair, and it opens up her mind to, or like she suddenly feels freed through this experience. And then obviously ends up murdering her husband. But it's in this, it's presented more like the build-up of, and that's what the whole thing feels like, this pressure build-up. It's straight through with no interval, but it's almost, it ran almost 2 hours. They said it was an hour and 50, but it ran almost 2 hours.
Did it feel like 2 hours, or did it kind of fly
Not
by?
Not really. No, it didn't fly by, but it did feel like you definitely can't put an interval in this because of that building.
Oh, the intensity would be broken.
The building intensity, yeah. And her performance is amazing. Sometimes she kind of does almost like interpretive dance, like almost like a sort of non-neurotypical like stim. Like she kind of like does these movements because like the pressure's so much on her that she kind of flinches, and then it sort of gets to the point where it's like a pneumatic drill. They make this pneumatic drill noise and her whole body convulses, like it's like that's within her brain.
I'm so glad I didn't see this.
It was quite like stressful. I had two women sat behind me who talked pretty much, not throughout the whole thing, but in every scene change they talked, but about the play at least, but at full voice. So just after the first scene, she'd go, oh, it's stressful, isn't it? But she's really good. Yeah, she's really good. Just every scene, little comment, just that, oh, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, just because the lights are slightly dimmed for this scene change, and the scene changes were kind of integral to it. The choreography was really good. The set was amazing. The set was by someone called Hemi Shin, and it was like a forced perspective. So the room, it was like bright yellow, like a sort of toxic mustard yellow, and it went back into like a V, into like a tight V. So you were looking into this small little box, basically. And people entered through these doors that then closed off, and little captions were put onto almost like above a theatre that gave the setting. So it'd say like domestic, and they'd raise up and set the scene. But it was a really cool set. It reminded me of like Terry Gilliam's Brazil, or like a sort of German expressionist 1930s nightmare. And it's directed by someone called Richard Jones, who you'll probably know from the Royal Opera House. He did Anna Nicole.
Yes.
He did De La Bohème. And I'm thinking about the set from Bohème. He did those streets that were like forced perspective in the little box. He obviously likes that aesthetic of things kind of built in these little stages within a stage, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, he's a really interesting director.
It was a really interesting piece. I think Rosie Sheehy's performance was pretty incredible. Like, that's the sort of takeaway from the night. That's why people stood up at the end and applauded. But it is quite full on. It's not like a fun, easy watch. I went with Stevie. She got the tickets through the PwC previews thing, where they released those tickets 5 weeks before for £10. So we only paid £10.
Great.
But it wasn't like a fun night at the theatre, but it wasn't like going to see Six the Musical. We were both like, whoo, that was quite intense. But also really interesting to see, and also to see a historical a world famous play from the 20s that still has that relevance, has a feminist...
Thing is, for some people, this will be their jam. It's like people that watch...
It was kind of my jam.
Crime documentaries on Netflix about families that get murdered. I don't want to watch that. I just
I do.
But
quite
a lot of people are like, that makes some people will love to go and be completely engrossed and feel emotional and heavy, and they'll be like, whoa, that was so incredible.
I kind of did. And I think her performance, she like really goes through it. So by the end, you are like, wow, like what a performance.
Do you know what would be the nightmare for me is to have gone and seen that and then realise that there was no escape from the theatre. Like,
oh, no, you're in there for an hour and 15.
I couldn't think, oh, I'm not enjoying this, I'm leaving in the interval.
No,
I'd be.
You're in. Yeah, and also I sat up in the Lillian Bayliss Circle, which is the upper circle at the Old Vic, which I haven't been in for ages. The very top. Did not realise there's no armrests. The seats are really close together. The upper circle's a bit of a tight sit for an hour and 50. This show is about discomfort, it's about tension. So just, I was like, I'm not going to move, I'm just going to focus. I'm going to like, and I went on the journey. But I don't know I'm not saying like you need to rush to go see this. Not your thing.
It's definitely not my thing.
No, but the staging was really cool. I really
liked
it. It was really unusual.
I can hear
quirky.
That it sounded amazing. Just
I'm glad we saw it.
So can people still go? Is it still
Yes, so Mackinell runs until the 1st of June at the Old Vic. We got our cheap £10 tickets, but you can get some good cheap ones up in the Lily, up in that circle. But just be warned, the legroom is smaller up there. So you might be better off. I'm trying to think. Sometimes we sit on the side of the first circle because they're a bit cheaper. And I'm just trying to think if that stage would be obscured. I think because of its shape, you wouldn't see, because it's that kind of retracting V, you wouldn't see some of the entrances from the side you were sat on. But then they mostly come into the centre for the action. So I think you'd be okay. Because it's a smaller set within the set, I think you'd be okay. So I think it was pretty cool. Anyone who likes the play and is going to see it, I think they'll have a great time. But yeah, it's an hour and 50 straight through of quite an intense, dark ride about a woman just being crushed.
Yeah, don't be getting snacks and drinks and getting a little bit pissed on the way in and then down and be like, no.
When I turned around and saw these women, they did have a bottle of rosé and they'd obviously like come. I mean, they seemed to enjoy it, but... Just hearing them talk at full level was quite funny. I'm just like, not even a whisper.
No.
Just, oh, it's good, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't know why people do that. I don't know what it is.
They just think, I'm like, do you think
I think it's because they think they're only seeing things from their own perspective. And they're like, oh, they're changing set now, we can talk. They're not thinking about anyone around them.
Yeah, and I'm like, but it's not a blackout scene change. And even then, you probably shouldn't talk full voice. But this is like... That's part of it. Anyway, I still had a good time. So that's Mackinell at the Old Vic until the 1st of June. So moving on to our final show, let's go back to the National Theatre, to the Grand Olivier stage.
For Nye with Michael Sheen, or as I like to call it, New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve, NYE. Why don't you tell us what this one's about? I feel like I've talked too much now after doing my Mackinell.
Okay, here's my best go at what it was about. Nye Bevan is the man who created the NHS system.
End of story.
That's all you need to know. And it was very, very interesting. Michael Sheen, his performance was incredible. I cannot, how he remembered all those lines. He is on stage for the entire thing. We find him in a hospital and he's being visited by his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he then starts having these kind of hallucinations and he's sort of like fever dreams almost, and then you get to see glimpses of him petitioning his local MPs to have a nationalised health system, because he's implemented a way of working in his parish, in his...
Yeah, he's from a mining community.
Yes.
And so sort of the mining, what they call it, like the mining unions have set up this system where the healthcare covers not only the miners, but the families and everyone else in the town.
And it's working. And he's like, this is working really well. So he wants to take it to other areas, and particularly areas where people are not able to, they're not able to afford medication for their children, for their wives. So they want the men to be healthy. So they're giving, you know, they're the second class citizens, really. And he wants everyone to be able to afford healthcare.
Yeah, thinking about that when all the different parts of the UK, like, had, you know, better or worse doctors, depending on where you were in the world and which doctors wanted to go to which places and work at those hospitals. We just take it for granted that
I found that bit, that part of it, I didn't realize how it was really formed and how he took it to parliament, how he broke down the doctors' unions and
he was quite a charismatic character.
Yeah, he was a fighter, wasn't he? And like the stress that he was under and the pressure to do a U-turn on this, basically, and he just refused to give up. It was really, really moving as well, wasn't it?
Yeah,
at
it was.
The end.
Well, to see something about the National Health Service in the National Theatre has, like, a sort of synergy.
But I think because he was so likeable,
Everyone,
by the end of it, you're completely, like, kind of a little bit in love with him. You're like, this is, like, this man should be, you know, he's just a great, great person.
And that's why I think having a star like Michael Sheen helps, because you've already kind of got the buy-in of Michael Sheen.
Yes.
Everyone kind of loves Michael Sheen, and he's a really good actor. But you have that sort of buy-in, a sort of a Welsh national treasure, portraying another Welsh national treasure, kind of helps you get in there.
I was like a little bit choked up, and there was some other people crying.
There was someone crying behind me.
Yeah.
For sure.
In a nice way. It's not like there's no like, there's not like a pin drop and everyone's like that. So it was like a kind of, wow, we've all gone on this journey.
Yeah, it's just looking back at like an amazing life.
Yeah.
And the amazing relationship he had with his wife. I thought that was a really interesting relationship that they had going on.
Yeah, because they also showed the toll it took on his family.
Yeah.
This wasn't just a sort of plain sailing. Like, it did have effects on his personal life.
Mm. And I like these stories that span a big length of time. And the artistic director of the National Theatre, Rufus Norris, directed this. And he did Small Islands in that same space. Mm. And it reminded me of Small Islands in its scope and in some of its direction. And I thought the directing got better. The early scenes, I was like, I wasn't too sure with the opening.
It was a little slow.
And also, I felt sitting up in that circle, you can feel a little distant.
Mm.
So it drew me in sort of after that first scene of him at school where did he have a speech impediment?
Yes. Stutter.
And when he sort of conquered that first kind of feel-good moment, I guess, brought you in. That was a clever way to kind of bring you into loving that character, when he found a way to conquer his, you know, adversity as a child sort of thing.
Yeah, you're right. It was feel good.
Yeah, it's a feel good show.
And, you know, the Olivier Theatre, I just love it in there. You feel like you're in a kind of...
Like, yeah, it's so big.
It's so big. You're in like a Roman sort of amphitheatre, almost. Yeah,
that huge curve. And like I said, we felt a little distant at the beginning because you are quite far away up at the back of that circle. But once the, like, theatre of it all draws you in and the character draws you in, then it's fine. And again, we paid... £20 for those seats up in the circle, kind of two rows from the back. But so yeah, we couldn't see Michael Sheen's face up close. If that's what you want, you're going to have to pay more. But we still felt part of it because of what a good play it was.
And that's why it's just worth, I think, booking things the minute they go on sale. Like
at the National, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you don't know what you're going to get, but it might just be a really good night out.
And also, if you loved it and you were like, I wish I'd been close to Michael Sheen, then you can... assess now whether you think, do I want to spend £60, £70pounds and try and get closer down? And if you wanted to get tickets to this, it is on until the 11th of May, so actually not that much longer. And most of them are sold out, so you'd have to do the Friday rush.
Or check for returns.
Or check for returns on the day, but they could just be a few seats at like £90. So if you want cheap seats, you have to do Friday rush. However, it is actually being filmed tonight. They're filming two performances I saw. So at some point this will go into cinemas. So anyone around the country, and I think this will be a good one on film.
I agree.
Because Michael Sheen is a film star, and that does help to have a presence you recognise from cinema in a play on screen. It kind of helps break down that divide.
Mm.
And also, I think it's just a good filmic kind of story, like a biopic.
Yeah, I can definitely see this. The way that they also, that they've done the all of the doctors on that screen, that'll translate really well onto film.
Yes, there were some nice directorial things in it. And I liked the little musical moment that I enjoyed, helped lighten the mood. And I do like at the National, the kind of unnecessarily big ensemble that don't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, that always feels quite nice that they just have so many
extras, like
in a film. You just don't usually do that in a play, have an additional 10 people that are just kind of there to fill the space.
Yeah,
that's
a good point.
So, yeah, I think this would be good. So, this will come to cinema. So, if you miss it, if you can't get to see it before May 11th, you could still see it.
11th of May.
The 11th of May. It's because I've written them on my little notepad.
As May 11th.
As May 11th, yeah. But that's when you've got until to see this. And then at some point it'll be in cinemas. So it's worth keeping an eye out for Nye with Michael Sheen at the National.
Just before we finish, I just want to mention that I have been back to see Police Cops again.
Yes, you have. Third time's a charm.
Third time's a charm. It's now finished and I'm so glad that I went back. Because this time when I went back, I saw the understudy, Ben Lancaster.
Again.
And he was one of the first people that I saw doing it. I didn't realise he was the understudy. He actually played the main part when I first saw this musical.
Yeah.
And his timing, his physical comedy is brilliant.
Oh, that's cool. You got to see it.
But he was playing the cat kind of character, the kind of quirky.
Oh yes, yeah.
I can't remember.
Does he play the boss there?
Mafia boss or something. Yeah. So okay. And it was just as funny. It was just as good. It was brilliant. And it was a matinee this time, so like it wasn't as full. And I was thinking, is this going to be a dry crowd? Is the energy not going to be up enough? But everybody is immediately laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just have, they just have so much presence and energy in it, don't they?
Yeah,
so
that show pulls the audience along.
It really does.
Yeah.
So didn't want to let a podcast go by without mentioning Police Cops, my favourite musical of 2024.
Oh, that's cool. And it might be back. Who knows? Back at the South Oak, where it might find another home. It seems to have done well.
Yeah, I hope it does.
Cool. Well, I don't know what we've got coming up next.
We're seeing Streetcar Named Desire the ballet in May at the Sadler's Wells Theatre, which is by Scottish Ballet. I've seen it twice before. I love it.
That's a big recommendation. We are looking forward to that one a lot. Well, thanks as always for listening to Theatre Club Podcast. Follow us on Instagram @TheatreClubPodcast. Bye.
Bye.